Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Parents Are the First Guru and Karma Is Not Destiny, and then Becoming Centered, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhinatha Velayatha Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Welcome to everyone. Start with some news, wonderful news from the Kathir family, that their daughter Amala just gave birth to a baby girl in Kuala Lumpur. Congratulations. Start with another story. relates to Gurudeva and happened after Gurudeva's passing. The Sendin family, Navan, Miravati, and Chidambaram, were in the Siddhi Vinayaka temple in Sacramento having Namakarana for Chidambaram and Miravati. And some of our members were there. I told this story once, but most of you weren't here, so I'm telling it again. So one of the members sent me an email afterwards and reported on it and said, you know, Chidambaram was a little bit restless there for a while, but then he looked up and saw Gurudeva and quieted right down. So this member perceived Gurudeva in his spiritual body, of course, and was aware that Chidambaram was looking at Gurudeva, and that sight influenced Chidambaram and made him feel very peaceful. So Chidambaram certainly is a special baby, and that's a special member too, to be able to see Gurudeva like that. Maybe some of you saw Gurudeva this morning. He certainly did feel quite present. I also wanted to honor some special guests. We have some gurus among us this morning. You may think did some of the monks get a new initiation? Where are these gurus? But, in fact, the gurus are all of you who are fathers and mothers. Yes, all of you who are fathers and mothers are indeed gurus. In fact, the first guru. So, in thinking ahead for the year, and we have a new year here, I'm starting to develop a talk on parents as gurus to take around later in the year to when we're visiting Mauritius, Malaysia, and Singapore and elsewhere. So I'm developing it, so I thought I'd share some of the preliminary aspects of it this morning. So it'll include, of course, Gurudeva's recent message about the war in the home. You're all familiar with that which he took to the United Nations and spoke there before a large gathering of spiritual and religious leaders on the idea that everything starts in the home. So if we want to change the behavior of the world, we have to change the behavior in the home. And that it's the way the children are raised, violently or nonviolently. If they're raised with a lot of corporal punishment, that's considered a war in the home. They're taught that violence is acceptable and that violence is how you solve problems. And so later on, when they grow up in life, of course, they express that violence because their first guru taught them to solve problems by using violence. So that was Gurudeva's message, you know, a very powerful message. And of course, that's an important part of the talk, but I do plan to add a lot more other subjects. And in fact, I'm going to look for help over the next few months from all of you to contribute ideas. Many of you have had many, many years of raising children and grandchildren, have lots of experience, plus have been teaching classes in alternatives to corporal punishment, which we call positive discipline. So all of that experience will be very valuable in helping to mold this talk over the next few months so we can take a wonderful message out to the world when we travel later in the year. So, Swamis and other religious teachers are in an unusual position of being the second guru. Someone else has been there first. So, an analogy to dancing. So if you are someone's second dance teacher, what they learned from that first teacher is really important. If they learned in an unsystematic way for many years and didn't really go at it in the correct way, then what do you have to do? You have to spend years undoing what they were taught by the first teacher, right? You can't make any progress at all. You have to undo all the mistakes, all the erroneous moves that were taught by the first teacher. So a swami is like that too. And Gurudeva faced this time and time again. Someone comes to him as an adult in their 20s or 30s. What does he have to do? He has to spend years helping the individual undo what the first teacher did before any additional progress can be made. So you can see the importance here. There needs to be a good working together to agree on some basic principles. And if basic principles are agreed upon, then when a young adult approaches a swami, the swami can help right away. Years and years don't have to be spent undoing what was done by the first guru. So that's the idea behind the talk. You can see how important it is. Another email came in recently from a young woman in her mid-20s, married, living with her husband, who interacts with her mother quite often. And the mother has always and still continues to constantly criticize her. She can never do anything right. And her mother's never happy with what she does. So, she's been reading Merging with Shiva now for a couple of years, and she says, boy, before I read Merging with Shiva, this upset me so much. I was just constantly upset by my mother and constantly feeling negative thoughts about myself. Now that I've read Merging with Shiva, I'm doing better. It just upsets me a little bit. But I still wish she just wouldn't do this. Every time I get with her, she just complains and criticizes me. I want to take care of her in her old age, but this is really hard. So she went on like that. Unfortunately, she's reading Merging with Shiva, but you can see the problem the first guru created, right? Created a terrible sense of self-esteem. The poor young woman does not have a positive image of herself. And why is that? Because her mother created a negative one. And now she has to work for a number of years to get rid of that negative image. It wasn't there when she was born. It was put there by her mother. So the goal, of course, is for her to read Merging with Shiva and for Artur to encourage her more until she realizes that, gee, she's perfect. It's her mother who has the problem. Right? She's a perfect being. The mother has the problem of finding faults in others and verbalizing them, and of not building self-esteem. So that the young woman's in perfect shape. It's her mother who needs to learn a different form of behavior. But that may not happen, but at least the young woman will reach the point where she realizes that. She takes on the attitude, gee, I'm just fine. It's my mother who's got the problem. But that takes a little doing. So, how do we build self-esteem? Here are some thoughts. Avoid lowering self-esteem through comments that are critical. As how could you do such a stupid thing? That's a famous one, huh? How could you be so stupid? How could you do such a stupid thing? What a dumb thing to do. I'm sure you won't succeed at this. You're just so dumb. Those kinds of comments are actually made by parents. And when the child hears them year after year, it goes in and creates that sense of, gee, I'm dumb because my parents told me so. So then the swami has to come along and try and get that out. So there are options. When correction is necessary, only correct the behavior, not the person. Here's an example. what you did was really foolish. So that's the behavior, right? It's not that you're foolish. What you did was really foolish. But you are smart. I am sure, now that you know better, you won't do that again. So the behavior was foolish, but the child is smart. And certainly is smart enough not to do it again, right? So you correct the behavior. You don't challenge the person. The behavior is stupid or foolish, but the person is never stupid or foolish. Build self-esteem through comments that praise the child when doing well. Making comments such as, "I am sure you will do well." And here's one that Gurudeva followed very systematically. Build self-esteem through creating successes for the child. For example, teaching your son how to grow something simple in the garden, and then when he does it on his own, praising him. So Gurudeva raised all of us on that simple principle of giving us things to do that were within our capabilities. And when we did them successfully, he would praise us. Then, of course, he'd give us something a little bigger to do. And when we did that successfully, he'd praise us. And what was that doing? It was building a subconscious with an attitude of being able to be successful. I am able to be successful. I am able to take on challenges and do them well. Why do we have that attitude? Not because somebody told us about it, but because we actually had many, many successes. And we're praised for them. Because that happened to us, we have a positive subconscious, one that feels it can do things. I can, I will, I am able. That's its natural attitude because that's the way someone was raised up. We get lots of emails coming in, and they're wonderful sources of stories and insights. So one email came in recently from a young man who asked a very good question. He said, "Well, we have a certain karma, and that karma is going to manifest. So what's the point of our parents trying to change our behavior? We're going to do what we're destined to do, so why bother with us? You know, just let us express our karma and, you know, why all this discipline and this and that? And, you know, what's going on here anyway? Isn't it inevitable that I'm just going to do what I'm going to do?" That's karma, right? Well, what an interesting thought. You know, this is a young man, and I think he's about 16 or 17, and he's throwing out this idea, you know, which is a very philosophical concept for someone that age. So I thought about it and came up with an answer that Gurudeva often gave when he wanted to show how karma could manifest. Because karma doesn't manifest in a specific way. A karma can manifest in a number of different ways. So the example he gave was something about getting injured. So the way I'm going to express it this morning is the idea that you have the karma to break a leg. Because of some actions in your past, the reaction is going to come back to you in this life of breaking a leg. Okay, so what happens? Well, how that karma manifests depends on how you live. It doesn't manifest in exactly the same way, necessarily. So, as Gurudeva would say, if you live an ordinary life, you know, selfish life, you're not religious, you're just kind of going along, thinking about yourself, not really helping other people, you know, selfish and just interested in yourself, the karma will manifest in its grossest form, which means you're going to break your leg. But if your lifestyle is more refined, you know, if you're not always thinking about yourself, if now and then you do things for other people, if you're kindly on occasion, you know, you're living not just an ordinary life, but, you know, some generous, unselfish qualities are manifesting, the karma will come in a more refined way. So, for example, you might just bruise your leg. You almost broke it, but thank goodness at the last minute something happened and you just got some major bruises on your leg. So that's better than breaking it, right? But the karma has fulfilled itself. And the third example is, if you're living a religious life, you're doing your sadhana every day, you're really helping other people, you care about other people, you're generous, the karma can come in a very refined way. For example, you're watching television news, and for some reason some famous person has broken their leg, and so you see the story, and you take on the emotion of it. It feels for a minute just like you broke your leg. You identify with it so intensely. So you've gone through the karma of breaking your leg, but in a very subtle way. You experience the emotion of it. Your leg didn't even get bruised. So that was the example Gurudeva gave on a number of occasions about how a karma will manifest. So therefore, you know, to answer this young man's question, definitely the good advice of parents and of religious elders is important, because it changes the way you live. And it's according to how you live that your karma will manifest. So that's a good answer for this young man. We're going to send that out today. We sent him one yesterday, but this is an even better one. So we'll send because I remembered it this morning. I got up early this morning, got up at 3 o'clock to think about my talk, and I was thinking about it. And I said, oh, that's a wonderful story for this young man. He'll really understand that. We're pleased and honored to have Swami Pragyananda with us this morning. When we were in New Delhi about 3 or 4 years ago, we had the pleasure of visiting Swamiji's ashram and being hosted by him. He even cooked all the curries for lunch by himself, a real treat, and showed us his whole facility upstairs and down, including the special lingam. Was that mercury lingam?
Yeah, mercury.
Very special Shiva lingam there, made of mercury. So very fond memories of that experience. We're happy to be able to reciprocate and have Swami visit us and host him these few days. I'd like to read from one of Gurudeva's Merging with Shiva lessons, 108. The entire spiritual unfoldment process, oddly enough, is designed to throw you off center so that you have to work to pull yourself on center. First, life throws you off center. You have all kinds of experiences. You make mistakes, and with your indomitable will, have to control that fluctuating awareness to get it right on center and to be all right right now. Feel that powerful energy flowing through every nerve current, and be that energy rather than the fluctuating nerve current. Then one day, when you really get good at it, you find a guru. You are firmly on center, and he tries to throw you off center. My guru, Yogaswami, would always throw his disciples off center and set them spinning. They had to work hard with themselves to get on center again. That strengthens the sinews and the muscles of man's becoming himself, becoming totally aware that he is aware, and then controlling his mind by not allowing his awareness to get caught up in the vast delusion of the externalities of the mind. How's that? That's a good one. The vast delusion of the externalities of the mind. We had some very interesting emails come in this last week, which we were answering, and one of them told a story that I'm sure many of you have experienced, the story of encountering someone in the workplace or in some situation where you're constantly interacting with them and this person totally upsets you. You find this person crude, antagonistic, low-minded. And when you interact with the person, you get disturbed and you just wish that person wasn't there. Have you ever found that kind of situation to be the one you're in? So, of course, the first thought is, well, I wish this person would go away. Boy, this person is a real bother, you know. I was doing so well before this person came into the situation. Why don't I stay and they'll leave, right? Simple way of solving it. But in this lesson, Gurudev is pointing out what we pointed out in the email to this individual, that life is offering you a wonderful spiritual opportunity. You don't want this person to go away. No, this person is a wonderful chance to have yourself thrown off center. This is chance for great spiritual progress. Boy, you're so happy that this antagonistic, crude, upsetting person came into your life that you can't believe it. Mm-hmm. That's what we told him. I hope he believes it. Because it's really true. It's really true that sometimes we think of spiritual progress as just being in a quiet place without being disturbed. That's how we make spiritual progress. Let's go out and sit near the river where it's quiet, and then I can make spiritual progress. You know, when I'm involved with all these antagonistic, low-minded, crude people, there's no way I can make spiritual progress. But that's not the case, and that's what Gurudev is pointing out. Both situations are important for our spiritual progress. If we always just sit in a quiet, peaceful, serene place, we're not challenged to control our emotions. We're not stirred by something instinctive to see if something instinctive in us pops back. We just learn how to be peaceful if everything around us is peaceful. So that's important, to be able to be in a peaceful situation. But it's also important to be challenged by life, be challenged by the guru, and find ourselves thrown off center. I remember a long time ago, Gurudeva once took me from one center to another. We had a very quiet retreat center in Northern California at that time. It was just so peaceful. You know, you're out in nature all the time, so beautiful, water and everything, just like here. So there I was, just so peaceful and happy and content. Then we went to another place where Gurudeva was involved in sorting out some rather intense interpersonal problems. And that was just so unpleasant and so upsetting and so disturbing. And I said, Gurudeva, you know, it was just so nice where I was. And Gurudeva said, well, you have to learn to be able to be at peace in this situation as well. In the midst of disturbance, you have to learn to be able to be peaceful, just like you are peaceful in a peaceful, natural setting. So that was a lesson I never forgot. And that's, of course, what this lesson is, that challenging times are good for us. So if life challenges us, that's great. Then the guru doesn't have to, because we're already challenged. But looking at these antagonistic situations as a chance for spiritual growth, as a chance to get better control over our emotions, is a wonderful perspective. One other piece of advice Gurudeva gives in this kind of situation, if it's ongoing and you're really dealing with someone who is seriously antagonistic, is to be totally transparent, just like you're not there. They throw all these antagonistic thoughts at you, these antagonistic words, antagonistic actions, and it just goes right through you like you're not there. It doesn't touch you. That's the goal. It's like you don't even see them. They're there, but you don't see them. Come in. Welcome. So if you're able to do this, what happens? you don't get touched by this situation. It's like it didn't happen because you've remained totally transparent to it. And eventually the karma will come back on the person who generated it in a very simple way. We don't have to do anything. We just pretend he's not there, nothing happened, and eventually the person will reap the karma and hopefully the lesson of that experience, because we want everyone to progress. Just because someone's nasty to us doesn't mean we don't want them to make spiritual progress. But if we're able to do that, then it's not dragging us down, not getting us involved, not creating an unnecessary karma for us. However, human nature is such that it likes to get back at someone. If they're nasty to us, we should be nasty to them, right? It's only fair. They made us unhappy, why shouldn't we make them unhappy? Well, of course, if we do that, then we're creating an unnecessary karma for ourselves. There's no need for us to be the vehicle for their nastiness to come back to them. If we allow ourselves to be that vehicle, then we're creating additional karma for ourselves. But if we can be transparent, not let it affect us at all, pretend they're not even there. Everybody else sees them, but we don't. Everybody else hears them, but we don't. Then it doesn't affect us. We don't create an additional karma for ourselves, and we just let the law of karma work by itself. Their action will create a reaction, which will show them the folly of their ways eventually. It might take years, might take even till the next lifetime. But just leave it to the law of karma. Don't feel we need to be the ones to teach them the lesson. So that's what Gurudeva suggested, and it works very, very well, and also helps you remain peaceful, because then you don't get disturbed. So that's the thought for the day, is that that antagonistic person, that crude person who always upsets you, says the wrong thing, tries to disturb you, if you have one around, boy, you're in luck. You have a chance to make spiritual progress. So don't chase them away. Just learn to remain centered. Whatever they say doesn't affect you. You're the centered one, centered in your spiritual energy. Om Namah Shivaya.